Ball. Hello and welcome back. This is Burst the Bubble live on CamFM, our first show in the new studio. Hello, I'm Michael Quintero, and joining me today to talk about the news is my guest, John Nelson.
Good morning to you all. Yes, this is the first one of the new year, but at a slightly unconventional time.
Yeah, because of the student radio chart show, we had to move to 11 in the morning rather than our usual slot, which is going to be 4 p.m. in the afternoon, as opposed to 4 p.m. in the morning, which doesn't exist. And yes, if you do want to know what's being played out on student radio stations across the country, you should tune in 3 till 5 p.m. for the student radio show, the chart show. And those of you who listen to us a lot will notice that we are in fact missing one member of our team. That's Chris Smoten, who is in America at the moment on an internship and is going to be sending us dispatches all the way from the US through the wonders of modern technology. And if you're a fan of Chris, and let's face it, who among our listeners isn't, then you will be able to hear his first dispatch later on in the show. But enough of that for now, let's get on with laughing at the silly news. And first of all, we've got a story about... Well, we've got a set of stories about crime.
I think it's best termed as crime. Crime question mark. Sorry, I tried to sort of mix the two words together there, which I really shouldn't have done.
Crime.
Crime.
It's great. That's like a new punctuation thing, question mark in the middle of a word, just to make that word unsure. It's like the Interrobang is kind of a question mark and a exclamation mark that have crashed in some sort of horrendous nuclear accident.
It's a crime against the English language, I think, is the problem that you're doing there. Anyway, shall we get on to our first story?
Yeah. Our first story is that a undercover police officer in plain clothes was chasing after an unusual suspect for 20 minutes when he... was out on the streets looking at where some crimes, some burglaries had happened, and a companion of his was watching on CCTV. And the CCTV operator found that there was someone acting quite suspiciously on his camera. And this, after 20 minutes of telling the plainclothes police officer that he was right on the tail of the suspect, turned out to be the plainclothes police officer.
So I love this story because it's just glorious incompetence on so many levels. The fact that he was repeatedly being told that he was on the trail of this burglar and yet never seeing him and never wondering what was going on. I mean, he must have been going out of his head right now. And at the same time, the CCTV officer, you feel like he would have noticed the fact that the police officer in question was never coming into shot, despite the fact that he was always so close, apparently. So he was just sort of running around and trying to find out. I noticed that in the college here, I find that in the accommodation we have pictures of all the porters around so you can identify them easily. Maybe they're going to have to start doing that in police headquarters to make sure you can identify all your staff and not just try and arrest one because they happen to be acting suspiciously. Also, how is he acting suspiciously in the first place? That's probably not a good sign that the plainclothes policeman looked like a burglar in the first place. Was he doing the shifty eyes thing? Can't really do that on radio. Sort of looking around and maybe sort of just checking out the houses.
Well, I assume he was like checking all the ways into these buildings, which stuff has been stolen from, to see like if anyone's forced entry. But that in its own way probably looks quite similar to going, I wonder if this door's unlocked. So I can go in there and partake of their goods.
Be aware that policemen and burglars are often similar. Do not judge until you have determined whether they are taking away a big bag marked swag or if they are in fact carrying a truncheon. Those are the two ways you distinguish policemen and burglars, if my childhood of cartoons has taught me anything.
This was eventually found out when a police sergeant entered the control room and recognised the junior officer, the plainclothes officer, on the screen. According to the quote we've got here, with the sergeant's sides aching from laughter, he pointed out to the PC that the operator had been watching him, unaware that he was a plainclothes officer. So yes, we can only assume that the police have also been working on some technology to make police invisible to cameras. Perhaps they've stolen it, perhaps they've done some investigation into vampires, who, in certain canons, don't actually turn up.
Maybe he's actually a vampire policeman. We don't know this. We could be closer to sort of the Ankh-Morpork world of Terry Pratchett than we realise. In fact, you know, it's equal rights for all people, whether they be, you know, male, female, alive or dead. Or undead, I guess. dead policeman, just not undead, probably won't be particularly good. Although you have sleeping policemen in the road, so, you know, there's no reason why we can't have inert policemen.
It would be an awesome TV show. The Vampire Policeman.
Rather than The Dead Policeman, that would not be an awesome show. The Vampire Policeman. So what other situations could the Vampire Policeman get into? Obviously, he doesn't get seen on CCTV, and so we end up with this, which does sound like it's straight out of Benny Hill. If you put the Benny Hill music over the top of it, then it would be brilliant, sort of like very budget.
I did wish that I had the Benny Hill music just so that I could play it during this story, but I don't have Yakuza sax on me, sadly.
Never mind.
Aerial surveillance.
Yes, aerial surveillance.
Be very good at that.
He could always, there'd be the problem if he had to do the night shift. No, not the night shift, the day shift. Night shift wouldn't be a problem. That would be right up his alleyway, presumably. Maybe he has a penchant for jam. I don't know. Like one of those, if he's a reformed vampire, obviously, because otherwise you wouldn't get into the police service. You'd have to be a reformed vampire. So maybe he just happens to have there is a sort of a burglary at a jam factory or something. And he was just sort of there trying to keep control of himself. There's so much jam.
you have the hilarious misunderstanding when you see him crouched over the body with blood on his hands and staying around when it turns out he was just forensics.
Yep, just the pathologist there.
I mean, you'd expect vampires to be able to go, yep, this blood is precisely 5 hours old, so we know that he was killed 5 hours ago.
Oh, I think we've got ourselves a series here.
Yeah. I shall start a work on a pitching document straight away after the show.
Excellent.
But moving on to our next somewhat inept crime story. There were $9 million worth of jewels stolen from the wife of the US ambassador to the Netherlands in 2006. So, just the fact there, that technically means they were stolen from the US, doesn't it? Not ambassadorial, what's it called?
Embassy.
Embassy, yes.
That's the word.
If she was in the embassy, then it was stolen from the US.
Because that is US soil.
Although later on it's got 7 million euro gems, so I'm not sure. Why are you mixing your units inside one news story? That's what I want to know. $9 million, 7 million euros, 5.9 million pounds.
She may have bought them from the Netherlands, so they cost her 7 million euros. But then when she was telling people how much they were worth, because she was American, they were like, they're this many dollars. But then for us laymen in Britain land, they had to make them pounds, because otherwise we wouldn't understand their true worth, because we don't deal in dollars or euros.
Oh, well, actually, later on in the story, it does say that she was staying in a Dutch hotel at the time, so perhaps it was your way round. Perhaps they were bought in America, and then she was in a Dutch hotel.
Quite possibly. Anyway, we should actually get to the punchline of the story, rather than just saying, so far, there was some diamonds stolen 5 years ago.
Yes, the jewellery was, in fact, found and held for safekeeping by the hotel. So, you'd think, if you've lost these diamonds, you'd make sure everyone knew, including the hotel that you were staying at when they were stolen.
You'd hope that they'd have the CCTV footage that they would look at. But then again, maybe they looked at it and they said, there's somebody acting suspiciously, but we can't work out who it is because they had not got a picture of all the hotel staff on their wall.
But, so the employee who found them assumed that they were costume jewellery rather than being worth millions of dollars, pounds or euros.
In fairness, if I came across a large quantity of stuff and I didn't happen to know that, like, the wife of the US ambassador was staying there, I'd probably assume they were costume jewellery as well. I've just got this nice idea that they probably used it to sort of just, you know, do sort of dressing up things and sort of say, oh, look, costume jewellery.
To get home for their kids to play with.
Yes. don't be careful with that one. Don't put that one in your mouth. No, costume jewellery is bad in your mouth. Costume jewellery goes on things that you wear. Hence, costume.
succinctly put there.
Thank you. I'd make a great parent.
So eventually these were taken for valuation and their true worth emerged. Although one would question whether they are truly worth that much if they can be that easily mistaken for costume jewellery. Have we in fact found 7 million euros worth of gems, which in fact look like those plastic things which might fall out of a cracker?
Or alternatively, if people will frequently mistake costume jewellery for 7 million euro gems, then we should just all wear costume jewellery and tell people that they're 7 million euro gems, because apparently you can't tell the difference.
Yeah. Yes, I personally would like to congratulate costume jewellers on the accuracy and expensive lookingness of their product.
Well done, costume jewellers listening to Cam FM. Well done. You have done us all proud.
Yeah. But Mrs. Arnell, who lost the jewels, had, in fact, already had an insurance payout for these jewels. So has anyone heard this? Does anyone know what actually happens if you have insurance payout for something and then you get the actual thing back? Do you have to give the money back?
I don't know. Well, presumably you can't guarantee that because you might have spent it or something, and then you have to presumably give the jewels back. But I imagine there's probably a time frame that elapses. After a certain amount of time, it doesn't become a problem because you've effectively had the insurance for missing those precious jewels for all of that time, and you had to go and make do with costume jewellery instead. I think so. You might get away with it. In fact, the story says at the end that they're not sure whether the insurance company are going to reward the hotel for finding the jewels. Like, they think there might be a finder's reward for them. So the insurance company's done very badly out of this at the moment.
And all because someone stuck them in a drawer. If this was insurance fraud, it'd be the most ridiculous insurance fraud ever. I mean, forget hard things like burning down your house or pretending that your canoe capsized and disappearing for 5 years and coming back claiming.
I mean, who would do that?
I mean, yeah, that's crazy, that sort of thing. Yeah. But when you can just put some jewellery in a drawer, which a lot of jewellery, I assume, not actually owning any myself, I assume jewellery lives in drawers?
Well, generally in drawers are on people. I mean, depending on... You don't just keep them in the drawer and sort of hope that everybody will wander at your drawer that's glowing slightly, maybe.
If there's anything visiting, like, the British Museum in London has taught me, it's that the jewellery is laid out for you with little tags with numbers on, and then below all the jewellery there's another tag explaining what the numbers mean. It's actually quite like reading a scientific paper with all the references.
I find it very disappointing when I see somebody wearing a necklace and there's no little tag underneath telling me exactly what it was, who made it, and...
How much it's worth?
Well, I just put it down and put 7 million euros. Nobody's going to tell the difference.
Yeah, perhaps we could have a smartphone app and can, like, cost my jewellery. There we go.
Yeah, sort of like those things that detect songs. Is it Shazam or something is the one that detects what song is being played?
A few of them, yeah.
Yeah, you can just sort of use that with the jewellery, and it'll give you all the little lowdown and everything, and it'll tell you whether it's been stolen and it's been done for insurance, like about 5 years ago, and all the useful things you might need to know with jewellery.
Yeah, so...
If you're a bloke, maybe.
So if you've had any issues with jewellery, or if you can tell us how insurance actually works when you lose things and they're found again, you can get in touch with us by email, studio@camfm.co.uk, or if you're listening online, you can use the web form at camfm.co.uk. You can text us if you put CAM plus your message to 80809, and text costs 10p plus your standard message rate. We've got one more... vaguely crime-related story before we go into a short musical break. And this is that bees could deter vandals at Greenfield Heritage Park. They are, in fact, looking for sustainable ways to protect all mill buildings. And one thing that they're doing is putting fences up, which is quite boring. But the other thing is that they could use security bees.
So I really, again, this is another story I love the idea of. I just love the idea that they were sitting in the meeting going, how can we possibly keep these things secure? What do people not want to walk into? And then somebody probably bursts through the door and goes, bees! Bees everywhere! Get them off me! And everybody panics. And then they all come back into the room and they go, that worked quite well. We should have bees. Other than that, they've just been watching Eddie Izzard too much, which is the other possibility.
But basically, what they're trying to look for here is... Just protect the buildings, because all around the buildings is basically free access land, and that people can go there and see for like the wildflowers and the possibly otters that are going to be hopefully around there again.
Maybe not if there are bees everywhere. I don't know. I'm not sure how otters and bees react. Well, I suppose otters are mostly underwater, and bees generally don't go underwater. So just lots of submerged otters waiting for the time to go up.
But anyway, people are going to use these parasites. And I want to know how they're expecting that the bees will protect the insides of the buildings, but not the outside.
Because they'll train them. You train guard dogs. They'll have, their little hive, and they'll go around with the little sort of training coats on to indicate that they're training. And this is currently quite an expensive project. And they will sort of guide the bees. They'll put flowers around the inside of the building with particularly good pollen. And they will encourage them to go and make honey from that. They'll do the sort of little bee dance thing, you know, where the bee dances to indicate where the flower is. They'll have somebody who's a trained bee person who will do the little bee dance. And then all the bees will go, that guy, that huge bee over there who's dressed in the big jumper, which is yellow and black striped, they clearly know where the pollen is. Let's go and follow them. And then they'll have this sort of route around. They'll do this kind of route around the inside of the building, like a National Trust tour guide. And it will sort of be there just in case anybody comes in. They'll suddenly get bees in the face.
You thought about this far too much.
Not really.
You've got this entire elaborate plan. Have they, in fact, hired you to train the bees?
I think I thought about this exactly the right amount for the amount of money that I'm getting. although I'm a bit... I mean, okay, so the great thing about having bees as well is that you get the nice side effects if you get, lots of National Trust or English Heritage honey or that kind of thing that will suddenly keep propping up. But the problem with bees is that, of course, if they sting you once, then they die. It seems quite sad. And bees are quite endangered as well, so I feel like this might be sort of like putting them in harm's way. I think the better thing to do would be to train wasps, because wasps are fundamentally useless animals. They sort of buzz around, they sting whatever they please. They'll go and sting the house if they want. It doesn't make any difference to them.
I just like that they sting whatever they please, and just like this wasp going around going, I wonder what I shall sting today. So many things to sting, so little time.
And the other thing is, and then eventually they'll go and the apples will fall down, and then they'll go down and they'll drink all the cider from the apples, and then they'll get drunk. And
cider from the apples?
Yeah, have you not seen wasps? If you have an apple tree, they'll go down to the apples as they're starting to rot, and they'll drink all the apple juice, and then they'll get really, really drunk. And then they'll stagger around on the floor, which means that if you're ever going and picking up apples, you always have to wear shoes, because otherwise you'll stand on a wasp.
I think you just come up with a flaw in your plan here. Now you're suggesting that the wasps will get drunk, and you don't want drunk guardians.
Security guards.
You don't want drunk security guards. I mean,
well,
can you imagine
keep apples away from them, and it will be fine.
But what if they want to? What if they demand apples as part of their fair working conditions?
They're wasps. They don't demand anything. They can sting whatever they please. They've already got it great in the sort of bug kingdom.
Yeah, I think that this is a plan which I'm going to give 4 out of 10.
4 out of 10.
For feasibility.
For feasibility. You think it's going to be hard to train the bees? Is that your...
I think it's going to be hard to stop them from just stinging people who are outside the building. I do think the training won't take, sadly.
Well, as I said, bees don't tend to sting unless they have to, because otherwise they die. So they'd have to be... I mean, if you put the hives in particular key areas where they'd have to get in or whatever... But I don't know how you'd get past if you were a train. You'd have to get everybody going in beekeeping equipment. And that would just become the new sort of crime get-up. You know, instead of, forget the balaclava, just have the sort of bee mask thing. And then you could just wander in as you please.
Yes, I'm sorry, Sarge, but I'm just here to inform you that we've got someone in a beekeeper's outfit acting very suspiciously on our CCTV cameras. If you could just identify this person through the several layers of impermeable cloth.
You're right on his tail. Just keep going. Keep going through the bees. It's fine.
I thought you were talking to a bee then. You're right on his tail.
Get off my tail. If bees could talk, they would not sound like that. They'd probably have their own language.
I believe they dance. They dance and to tell the other bees where the flowers are, where the best flowers are.
Yeah, they do the sort of little bee dance. I don't know exactly what it is. I think I'm remembering this from some kind of Osborne picture book somewhere in the dim and distant past, which means that it's likely that there was some artistic license in the pictures. But I'm pretty sure they do a specific flying motion that other people see and they go, oh, it's like Morse code or a semaphore type thing, because they don't have little flags.
Perhaps we could train the bees. If we're training them to sting people, perhaps we can also train them to basically fly in front of a CCTV camera and do a specific little flying dance to warn people, going, the hives and buildings are under attack.
The bee policeman. Yeah, I mean, as I said, you've got to have equal rights for all bees. Yeah. So, no reason why not a bee policeman.
We're going to go to a musical break now, but just before that, we've got one email in. Someone says that someone should buy me some jewellery so that I'll own some and can put it in a drawer. And then I will be very happy. So, yeah, don't make it too expensive. Just costume jewellery will do me rather than the 7 million.
We've already established this, yep. It'll just be costume jewellery.
Yeah, and we'll be back after this short musical interlude.
Your city. Your station. Your Cam FM.
Welcome back. This is Burst of Bubble live on Cam FM, a show about silly news stories. And that was Ed Sheeran with the A-Team. Now, back to silly news. And we've got a nice one here, which is one of those weird stories where you have some sort of giant corporate entity and you see a smidgen of humanity breaking through. And so this is one that it's nice, it's whimsical.
This is, of course, a giant corporate entity that is run or owned by our very own Chancellor. So, therefore, we're sort of doing Cambridge proud by indicating the human side of Sainsbury's. Yes.
But here we go. Sainsbury's has, in fact, renamed its Tiger Bread because it got a letter from a three-year-old girl.
Three-and-a-half-year-old girl.
Oh, three
it's very
and a
important
half-
at that age.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's nearly four.
It is nearly four, as they will all tell you.
But Lily Robinson, aged 3.5, sent a letter saying, "Why is Tiger Bread called Tiger Bread? It should be called Giraffe Bread." And it says, "Love from Lily Robinson, blah, blah, blah." Actually, she's written Sainsbury's in quite an interesting way. I typed it. It's "Dear Sainsbury's."
What with all the S's?
Yeah, it almost sounds bee-like.
Bee-like.
If it seems breeze.
Maybe she is, in fact, a 3.5-year-old bee.
Chris King from the Sainsbury's customer service team said, "Yeah, I think it looks much more like the blotches on a giraffe than the stripes on a tiger." Because the first baker, he said, it also said that the first baker who made it a long time ago used lots of O's there as well. "Thought it looked stripy like a tiger. Maybe they were a bit silly." And he sent a £3 gift card to Lily. And now Sainsbury's have actually gone one step further. And I've checked this in the stores. They have actually got, now on what used to be Tiger Bread, they have actually got Giraffe Bread on all the labels.
I wish, unfortunately with radio, we can't really show you a picture. But if you happen to be near a computer, or if you are so inclined later in the day, take a look at a picture of a Tiger Bread. And you will find that it does actually look more like a giraffe. The 3.5-year-old girl does indeed have a very... Or bee, as we might have been. Does have a very good point.
And apparently there was a big social networking drive to agree with this letter. It got spread on Twitter and Facebook and the like. And
we all know that's how democracy works these days.
Yeah, which led to Sainsbury's saying, "In response to overwhelming customer feedback, that our Tiger Bread has more resemblance to a giraffe." Not just customer feedback, overwhelming. They've just got someone trying to keep up with responses to all these emails and letters, I can only assume, coming in, going, "It looks like a giraffe."
There's sort of the small customer service, like, area in Sainsbury's in the back room where they have the computers and they have, you know, like... It's like the things you see on television with all the phones. They've got all the computers going around and you keep hearing this ding, 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 ding for new email, new message, new Facebook message coming through. And they're sort of trying desperately, the three of them going around the 12 computers on the wheelie chairs, pushing from one to the other, sort of clicking mice going, "Yes, giraffe bread, giraffe bread. Wait, no, it's giraffe bread. Can't we set up some kind of auto response for this thing?" It's a move. I'm not sure it's going to necessarily affect my life. It'll make me smile every time I see it in Sainsbury's. So I suppose that's a good thing.
Can you imagine any other products that might be relabeled, renamed? I mean, personally, I think Battenberg should be renamed Very Tiny Chessboard Cake.
Very Tiny Chessboard Cake. Like, it reminds me of there's a Gary Larson cartoon, the Far Side cartoons that he does, with two cavemen sitting over a board with two squares on, each of which has a checker on, and sort of one of them scratching his head going, "Should I do? Oh, I don't want to do that." And the tagline is just "early checkers." So yes, it could be sort of like a caveman chess sort of thing, and a homage to Gary Larson. But it's kind of the wrong colouring. It's more sort of, oh, I don't really know.
Yellow and pink.
Well, yes, but I was going to sort of use a describing word for yellow and pink ears, which monochrome is not.
Multichrome, bichrome.
Multichrome. It's multichrome cake. That sounds terrible. I would never buy that. I'd be much more likely to buy very small chessboard cake, even though it has a silly name.
Can you think of any other foodstuffs that we can rename?
Oh, it's a good question. So I can't help feeling things like the kiwi fruit are not particularly well named because they're not, I mean, like, it doesn't seem to look particularly like a kiwi. But I'm not really sure what you'd call it, like sort of hairy egg fruit or something like that. But that just sounds terrible. I don't think I should go into renaming things. I'm very, not very good. We should hire a group of 3.5-year-old children because they see the world like it is. And they would take a look of at all these products, and you'd say, "So, what do you think this is?" And they would say exactly what it looked like, and in such a way that everybody would know, because they wouldn't use any fancy terminology or whatever. They would tell you exactly what it looked like, and we would be able to use that, and all the foodstuffs could be described using 3.5-year-old language, and it would make the shopping experience a whole lot better. Provided you're easily confused normally when you go shopping, which I can't say is necessarily true for everybody.
Yeah. We're going to move on to another story now, but if you've got any comments about tiger or giraffe bread or other foodstuffs that could be renamed, we'd love to hear from you.
We'll send your stories onto Facebook, Sainsbury's, that big thing, not the other big thing.
All big things are not the same.
Sometimes a confusion I have.
But, yes, you can get in touch with us by email using the email address studio@camfm.co.uk or using the web form on our website, www.camfm.co.uk, or you can text CAM plus your message to 80809. We have, in fact, just had an email which mysteriously just says, "Good morning." So,
good morning.
Good morning. Yes, it's nice to hear from you too. I hope you're having a good one.
Yep.
We are now putting social interaction in. This is our attempt to humanise Bursa Bubble, that giant corporate entity.
We are indeed. Sometimes it does seem like we are faceless, but that's simply because we're on the radio. I know you can only hear our voices, but we do have faces. And they're currently saying good morning to you two.
Yes, in fact, I believe that there is a webcam, although I'm not actually sure whether... I don't think it's actually working at the moment, because the image that I'm getting here in the studio doesn't have any people on it, which is confusing, seeing as I'm standing in front of it.
What does it have on it?
It's just a microphone.
It has a microphone?
You can see...
Are you a vampire?
Yes, obviously. If I was running around chasing after a criminal on CCTV...
Well, then you wouldn't have been identified in the first place.
Indeed. But we could actually just have one person running, and the person not seeing the chaser, or vice versa, and it would all work out.
Yeah, that's true.
But moving on, we're going to move now to our section from across the pond. We've got one brief story, and then we're going to give you our dispatch from Chris Smoten. So,
yes, so stay tuned. That should be very enjoyable.
Firstly, we've got, well, not just a Canadian story, but also one which goes quite a bit further, which is that a couple of Canadian teenagers have managed to send a Lego man carrying a little mini Canadian flag up to the edge of space, using some definitions that lots of people will disagree with, so don't email in saying that this isn't the edge of space. They've sent it up on a balloon to 80,000 feet, which is 24,384 metres up.
It's still very high. It's a lot higher than Lego men have traditionally gone. It's going where no Lego man has ever gone before, or any Canadian, possibly.
Is it boldly going?
Is it boldly going? I see what you did there. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, it's not got any hair on it. I didn't actually mean to say boldly, but...
You do get Lego men with hair, but this particular one doesn't. This just has the little sort of round thing on the head where you could put hair if you had some Lego hair.
I like to imagine it as a Patrick Stewart Lego man.
Patrick Stewart Lego man.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
He did have a very unusually shaped head.
I know. He was meant to be... the character meant to be French. Didn't sound French at all. So,
like Quebec? What are you doing here?
I don't know. I was just going to say, well, the fact that this is a Canadian Lego man, there's no point to it. But then I realised that... I didn't know where I was going with that.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure the Lego man entirely knows where he's going either. I like to think that he's going to continue floating out into space, a bit like the Voyager mission that went out and is currently going to outer space. And at some point in the, you know, possibly not too distant future or in the dim and distant future, some aliens will pick up the Voyager thing and they'll be looking through it because it's got all like the bark and the is it a piece by Bark and the piece by it's got Imagine or something by the Beatles and various things will be like human culture very interesting and then like 30 years later this little Lego man will appear and I'll be like they have sent a model they all look like this, they all have funny shaped heads and they're yellow and apparently the maple leaf is the symbol of their world. So there are all these aliens who will be imagining that they'll eventually come and find Earth and they'll land and they'll assume that Canada is the hub of all the world because it has the maple leaf flag and they'll be very confused when we all have hair and are not yellow. But if the Simpsons are still going by then, which it probably will be, they'll be watching that and going, this is exactly what we came to Earth for, the Simpsons.
Yeah. Sadly, this is not the case. It did, in fact, descend. But they captured all of this on 4 video cameras, and if you've not seen it, I go and take a look. I mean, a lot of it is just kind of like Lego Man with Earth in background, but it's pretty impressive for all that. And they did it apparently on a budget of just $400. Yeah. And it's 2 17-year-old kids, and it makes me wonder, what have I achieved in my 8 years more than them?
I use a Tom Lehrer time, by the time Mozart was my age, he'd been dead for 2 years.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where you're like... As someone puts it, Dr. Michael Reed from the University of Toronto plays it down quite a bit. It shows a tremendous degree of resourcefulness. For 2 17-year-olds to accomplish it on their own is pretty impressive. I go beyond pretty impressive, really, and go, wow, that was awesome. Awesome, guys.
NASA, watch out. Canada is now right on your tail, and these kids are going to be around for a while.
Yeah. And of course Lego, when we are always amazed by the creative ways in which our fans use our products.
I mean because you get like the sort of the 3D printers built out of Lego and stuff like this. I mean, like, sending one into space is up there. I think that's really up there.
Yes, and they even managed to get they got everything back because it parachuted down. Obviously this is how they had the video. They didn't beam it back down.
They didn't give him a space helmet though, did they?
No,
I'm hoping he's all right.
There are Lego spacemen, aren't there?
There are. Yeah, there's a whole sort of range around the whole Lego space thing.
Yeah. This has spoiled it for me now. You've been resourceful enough to send a Lego man into space, but you weren't resourceful enough to source a Lego spaceman to do it.
No, but... Well, it might seem harsh on the spaceman, but the fact is they managed to get a Lego man up without having all the necessary Lego space equipment. Surely that's more impressive. You know, had you given him like the sort of the Lego space boosters, then it would have been much easier. They've done it without that. They've just had him on a piece of green knobbly Lego bit, which is the sort of grass bit, holding a Canadian flag and sort of dressed in a suit or whatever he happens to be dressed in.
Oh, he's not really dressed in very much.
They didn't send like a naked Lego man up there.
No. It's just like blue trousers and a sort of orangey red top. It's nothing exciting.
T-shirt and jeans.
Yeah, it's a very relaxed Lego man just going up into space.
And I'm feeling proud of the T-shirt and jeans wearing brigade. I feel like we have achieved something today.
Okay. We've actually had a couple of emails in. The inevitable one, which I told people not to send in. Mike says this isn't the edge of space. I believe I already stated that, just making your message and by extension you redundant.
This is what the media regard as edge of space. Yes. So we all know that's not necessarily scientifically accurate.
And apparently I've not vanished on some people's webcam images. I've in fact turned into 2 girls.
Turned into 2 girls?
Apparently.
Oh.
Yeah, that's not us.
Right, no. I would hope the voices gave it away. But, okay. Well, we'll have to look into that one, and we'll get back to you, possibly.
But now it's time for our dispatch from America, from Chris Moten. I hope that you enjoy this.
Your city. Your station. Your Cam FM. Moten, Burst the Bubble's correspondent for Far Off Lands, consigned to the outer darkness for crimes undisclosed and forced to labour in the mines of the Far West, excavating American-style silliness for your listening pleasure.
This and forthcoming dispatches will be coming from Seattle, nestled in northwestern nearly Canada, and doused daily with rain in a manner matched only by Cardiff and perhaps Atlantis. It's a city defined by two main forces. The first is, of course, Microsoft, my current employer, and the company that brought you that bong sound that indicates that whatever you just did, you're about to do it again, only swearier. It's the second, however, which forms the subject of the week's first story, Boeing. This week saw Boeing carrying out extended testing on their latest offering in the get-there-quite-fast-with-moderate-discomfort market, the 787 airliner. Built lighter than previous craft, and so keeping you alive a little more tenuously than before, they were required to take it on an exceedingly long 17-hour test flight to test its endurance whilst remaining over the US mainland in case it did not in fact endure. However, rather than simply fly in a massive circle until everybody was too dizzy to land on a runway not shaped like a hastily straightened paperclip, radar tracking revealed that the pilots had in fact drawn a colossal 787, accompanied by the Boeing logo, across the face of the United States. Personally, I feel that the awesomeness of being able to sketch on an entire country was sadly counteracted by their lack of imagination. So I've come up with a few suggestions for future flights, skipping the possibilities that are as obvious as they are unbroadcastable. Number 1. If it's possible without catching a nasty case of death by hitting the ground really fast, find yourself a glider pilot and follow him at a discreet distance, like you're the worst private eye on the planet. If the glider pilot looks into the cockpit window, quickly whip a newspaper in front of your eyes and make animated gestures at your co-pilot. Number 2. Draw some huge skywriting, but misplace an apostrophe. See if any air traffic controller is enough of a grammar nut to angrily order you to fly back and cross it out. And finally, number 3. Draw Trogdor, because Trogdor is awesome. Although be careful he isn't burninating Cheyenne Mountain or something, or the US Secret Service will subject you to that one that's worse than waterboarding. Maybe custard boarding. Or mustard boarding. Yeah. Aggressive employment of condiments aside, and returning to a more terrestrial bent, our next story of the week illustrates that whilst the lingering effects of the recession might lead to a rise in crime, they can also provide the victims of crime with an unexpected defense, as an Olympian man discovered when his pickup truck was pinched from a medical center car park whilst he slept on the pallet. As a side note, I should point out that he is an Olympian man in the sense that he comes from the town of Olympia. This story is not Zeus's van gets pinched, which is a shame because that would be excellent. Whilst regrettably a mere mortal, the victim was able to provide police with frequent updates on his position whilst the thief absconded through rural Washington, before being forced to abandon the vehicle when the thief overheard him and adopted Plan B, subdue with stabbing. I was trying to think how the thief could have responded when he realized that he had an informant on board. All I can think of is, see if you can rustle up some contacts with access to film props and get them to lay them out along a street. The police are surely liable to lose patience when their man starts describing how he can see, well, there's the Eiffel Tower, and just next to that, that's the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and I'm practically certain that's JFK leaning over the balustrade. By the time he gets to describing how he's pretty sure he can see the Statue of Liberty boxing with Godzilla and winning, the case has surely been filed under M for methinks mostly marijuana-made maybe-mad mythical mumblings, and our thieving protagonist is free to scarper to Mexico. Although a late update suggests that he was caught as he proceeded south through California after being shadowed by a jet airliner, which frankly he ought to have noticed. So that's it from America for this week. More transatlantic silliness will surely follow. But for now I'm off to watch Rick Santorum attempt to commence his Washington State campaign with a straight face, whilst the crowd nudge each other and Google him on their iPhones. By which I suppose I probably now mean Bing him on their Windows phones. Back to you, Michael, and insert guest identifier here.
97.2, camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, you're Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst the Bubble. That was The Wanted. We're glad you came. And I'm Mal Quintario, and my guest, John Nelson.
Hello again.
We are going to have a very tenuous means of transport related section here. We've got three stories to quickly rush through. Firstly, apparently, with the snow this winter, parents have been going out and getting top of the range sledges, which have been made by car manufacturers.
So Porsche and BMW, I believe, are the two in question. Very top line, sort of fancy cars, ones that you people look and you go, "Ooh, a Porsche, very nice." So they're doing the same thing with sleds. So you go up the sleds, and somebody goes, "Ah, oh, I have got this nice wooden sled," and they go, "Ah, oh, I have this plastic sled," and you go, "Ah, oh, I have this Porsche sled," and you go, "Ah, oh, very nice." I think is sort of the idea behind this.
But it's one of these things that. I wonder whether people are going to have stickers in the back of their cars, say, which says, "My other mode of transport is a Porsche."
My other mode of transport is a sled.
Okay,
you could just have it on the back of the sled. My other sled is a Porsche. I mean, that would work, if it happens to be a tray. You put it on the back of your washing up bowl. My other sled is a Porsche. My other washing up bowl is a Porsche. Something along those lines. I'm going to stop now.
It could be a cheat way of just saying, "Yeah, I've got a Porsche."
Yeah, a little bit.
I've got a BMW.
Although that said, if you are, I mean, if you're a kid, it's fine because they wouldn't expect you to have a car because that would be odd and illegal. But if you are an adult and you have a Porsche sled, then you might be sort of looked a bit curiously upon, especially seeing as they're probably designed for people of childlike size. So you might find it rather uncomfortable.
Yeah. There's a wonderful quote here from Bobskis. Saying, "People don't want to sit on the sledges and go down the mountain anymore. They want to go incredibly fast and do different things." I'm pretty sure going incredibly fast is kind of what they wanted by going down the mountain. I mean, if you don't want to go fast, you wouldn't go down a mountain. You'd kind of go somewhere flat and push yourself along with your feet. Like you do when the snow is not actually good enough to actually sledge and you get stuck and you have to go...
Yes, it does seem a rather curious statement. I mean...
I did actually see people pointing out having to break the ice... over the past week,
having punting out on the frozen cam.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Oh, that's dedication. Was it a Porsche punt or a BMW punt?
No, unbranded.
Well, maybe if they'd have had a Porsche punt, then they would have still been stuck.
Yeah. Carl has just emailed in to point out, you know, you can say you have a Porsche regardless.
That's true. There's nothing actually legally stopping you saying that you have a Porsche, but if you are found to be a liar. Then that might be worse than being found to be an adult with a Porsche. Actually, no, it's probably about the same.
Apparently, a 4x4 driver was fined because they were pulling their son, I assume, around on a sledge in public playing fields. So they just got the 4x4 going around the public park, dragging a sledge.
Kids don't want to go down a mountain anymore. They want to go incredibly fast while being towed by their parents' 4x4. That's what we've learnt from this story.
Moving on to another mode of transport, this is the fact that in the end of January, two girls trapped on rocks on the provincial coast were rescued by lifeboat after they put a call for help out on Facebook.
Yes, they had installed the lifeboat app on Facebook, and when they found themselves stranded, I can only presume that it was on their sort of smartphone or something. I'm presuming they didn't take a laptop out because that would seem a bit daft. And they sort of clicked the lifeboat app and said, "Press the help button," which is the only thing you have on the lifeboat app, and the lifeboat came out.
Yeah, so it's one of the questions, like, why didn't they just phone? Surely they could have just phoned.
Smartphones, people don't seem to think that these are a phone anymore. It's possible that they didn't have the number, but then again...
emergency services number. Didn't have the number.
They know Facebook.
Perhaps their 9 button had broken.
The 9 button had broken. They had to tap it out some other way.
We've actually had another email about the sled being towed in by the car. Someone said, "But surely a high-performance car sled will move faster. Is this a subtle plan to encourage more people to buy expensive 2-person sports cars by eliminating troublesome children?"
So it can be a family car now because you can put the poor sled at the back. So you have your two-wheel Porsche would be interesting. That would be a bicycle. And then have a sled on the back.
Well, thank you, Saf, for that email. I do like the idea of having a Porsche bicycle now.
A Porsche bicycle just with a sled on the back.
They could branch out into every mode of transport.
Porsche tandem, because that would be the two-seater Porsche bicycle. See, like there's many modes of transport we've got here.
Eventually, we're going to go to the Porsche shoes.
Porsche shoes? Yes, I suppose that kind of classifies it. Porsche slippers, maybe, for the transporter at home.
They're the most over-engineered slippers in the world.
We find that people don't want to wear slippers these days just to keep their feet warm. They want to wear slippers these days for the all-round comfort experience that you can only get with a Porsche. I don't know if we're doing some free advertising for Porsche or what.
I think we're just mocking the idea of like how expensive these things can get.
I hope so.
Talking about promoting things, this Tour de France winner, Jan Ullrich, has just been banned for being caught for failing a doping.
That's
doping,
not quite true. Jan Ullrich sort of won the Tour de France in 1997, was sort of around the time Lance Armstrong was big.
Yeah.
But he was recently implicated in the Operation Puerto. Unfortunately, you've now got to a subject that's sort of closer to things I know. But yes, he's retired a long time ago. But his new latest scandal, as it were, is that he's advertising a hair product with the slogan "Doping for Hair," which does not exactly do a lot to help clear your name if you're an ex-professional cyclist.
I'm just trying to work out what hair will need doping for. It's going to, like, performance enhancement.
growth enhancement, presumably. Like, you know, have muscle growth enhancing drugs. You have hair growth enhancing drugs. The problem is you have to make it on the hair, not on the muscles, because then that's just silly.
Yeah. I'm just imagining, though, you can, like, performance enhancing drugs. It's kind of like you want to, like, go faster and you want to, like, be better at your chosen sport. It's like, what does hair do? It sits there. How do you make hair better at sitting there?
We find that people don't want hair these days to just sit there. People want hair these days for the sleek movement they get when they're driving a Porsche. Yes, something along those lines, I feel. Maybe it is a sort of performance enhancing. Maybe you can sort of feel better at wearing a hat. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, you can sleek it more so you can get some better aerodynamic properties as you're cycling along.
Yeah, you can have that bit where it's sort of the hair that sort of comes, but you always want that bit where you're sort of standing or driving fast into the wind and you have the hair sort of flowing out behind you. We've made it better at doing that. You don't even need wind. That's just gel, basically. But you can get it such that it's got that kind of streamlined effect.
Yeah, performance-enhancing hair gel.
Performance-enhancing hair gel. You heard it here first.
We've had another email from Jasmine. This is someone... This is for, basically, physicists who do semiconductor physics specifically. Is the hair p-doped or n-doped? Does it have more electrons than it should, or less?
Ooh,
or possibly fewer?
I kind of have a feeling that's going to give it some kind of static charge or something, so that every time you take your jumper off, it just sticks to your hair.
Oh, no, I was thinking that the hair would then repel itself, and so you go, it'll be like one of those Van de Graaff generators.
For all the people who want Einstein hair out there, there are plenty of scientists who I'm sure would be keen in the market for that one.
Moving on, we've got a story that scientists invented a handheld gadget which can analyse alcohol and determine whether or not it's fake. Ooh, sorry. like my accent, apparently. But the best thing about this story, as John pointed out to me just beforehand, is that it was developed at the University of Leicester Space Research Centre.
Yep.
So are there some crazy, like, space parties / smuggling operations going on? Are they, in fact, working to how to stop Han Solo from smuggling more?
Maybe they are. I sort of just had this idea that, you know, they'd kind of given up on the idea of space and they were just sort of having parties and going, but this gin doesn't taste quite the same. We should investigate this, guys. We should investigate this. You know, we can't send off our astronauts up with lousy quality G&T. Astronauts are very highly trained people, you know, so you've got only the best for the astronauts.
Yeah, perhaps they'll just be able to, like, taste it and get, they're just so, they're like the peak of fitness and stuff. You've got to do all these fitness training and stuff before you actually go up there, because they have like 15 hour long spacewalks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they'll be so tip top condition, they'll be able to taste if it's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, like, and it's not like they can go down to the local off license when they're in space, right? I mean, like, if they've got the wrong gin, they've got the wrong gin, they're doomed with it. You can just imagine them sort of shouting, oh, dramatically into the radio, and they're like, what's happened? The gin, it's not real. No! Back at Space Command in Leicester. That's a phrase I didn't think I'd hear myself say. There we go.
Moving on, just quickly, 104-year-old man, Tathik Kanjar, is thought to have been the oldest person to become a new British citizen.
This is our feel-good story for the end of the show.
Yeah, one of our two feel-good stories. This is also the fact that he worked as a jewellery maker in Baghdad, so he would not have been fooled.
He would not have been fooled. He would know counterfeit jewellery from real jewellery. And that's pretty much why why we wanted him as a British citizen, because it's big business.
Yeah, and he says the secret to a long and healthy life was never get stressed and be relaxed. And we hope we've done our own bit to helping the longevity of our listeners by de-stressing and relaxing them over the course of this show.
Yeah, we hope we've given you a pleasant morning's wake up or sort of like breakfast or whatever you happen to be doing at this Sunday morning.
And finally, we're going to leave you with the Loaded Comedy Award, Loaded Comedy Awards, or Laughters, say is the funniest joke of the past year, and that's by Tim Vine. His joke was conjunctivitis.com. That's a sight for sore eyes.
Ba-dum-bum.
I believe he narrowly missed out last year with the joke crime in multi-story car parks. That's wrong on so many levels. That's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much to everyone who emailed in. You've been brilliant. This has been First of All. We'll be back at 4 p.m. next Sunday, back to our usual time. And if you'd like to hear some pre-recorded stuff with me and Chris Moten, the improvised panel game show, Panel to the People, is on CamFM at 6 p.m. this evening. So give that a listen. Thank you very much and enjoy the rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.